almost everyone has way too much. I mean, it's probably less than 0.1% of people who understand this and practically implement it. But when you get a lot of this omega, dangerous excess omega-6 fat in your skin and you're exposed to the sun, that combo is not a good idea. That can increase the risk of skin cancers and sunburn, both. But if you have a low linoleic acid or low LA diet, as is popular in many Bitcoin circles now, and I'm not sure, I would love to identify who is responsible for that, because I just want to thank them, because it's such a, I mean, the Bitcoin community seems to be up on this, and I'm surprised, but in some ways, but you know, I'm just delighted. So, and they understand the fact that if you have low linoleic acid diet, you're far less likely to even get sunburned, let alone skin cancer.
You're listening to the Wake Up Podcast with Alex Fetsky, the place where the most dynamic thinkers and practitioners in the world drop truth bombs and contrarian viewpoints to help you become the best version of yourself. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. The one and only Dr. Joe McCullough joins me on today's episode of Wake Up. This is one discussion I've been looking forward to recording for a long time now. We hit an entire array of topics with respect to health, longevity, energy, and lifespan. You name it. Sunlight, sauna, NMN and NAD, seed oils, sleep, grounding, telomeres, DNA methylation, fasting, dental, and even whether or not coffee is a shitcoin. Check out McCullough.com and sign up to his newsletter. He's truly the OG when it comes to so-called, alternative health, which is actually real, logical, and sound health. Thanks again for listening. Remember to subscribe and enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Wake Up Podcast. And on this episode, I have a very, very, very special guest, someone who I met less than a year ago. And someone whose work that I've been following for well over a decade, since the early days of me being a teenager on the internet. So it's my absolute pleasure to have Dr. McCullough himself join me.
Well, thanks for having me, Alex.
Absolutely. You were just saying it's the weekend with the longest sunlight. So I just got back from a run.
At least if you're
actually
in the northern hemisphere. If you're in the southern hemisphere, it's the exact opposite. Okay. As you go into Central America, it's almost a moot issue, because the closer you get to the equator, it's irrelevant. But in the U.S., it becomes serious, especially in northern U.S. and Canada. I mean, geez, you go to Alaska and you've got 18, 20 hours of sunshine today.
Is that, I mean, in Sweden, right, they have a couple of those days that are 24 hours. Is that around now, is it?
Yeah, right now. So this is the summer solstice as we're recording.
Oh, this is the summer solstice. Okay, there we go.
2 days, yeah.
All right. What would the flat earthers say to this?
I have no idea.
I'm kidding. It's I literally just went for a run, actually. I had no idea it was the summer solstice, but it was absolutely beautiful. I went for about a 45 minute run
in the sun. There's a lot of sunshine. Yeah, we'll talk about the benefits of sun exposure, because that's really one of the most important things you can do.
Well, let's get straight into that. I've got a whole series of questions here. So let's start with what I think we'd probably both agree is one of the most important things for human health, which is sunlight. So I'd love to...
Well, before I do that, I appreciate your intro, but for those who've never seen or heard of me, I just maybe give a few words.
I think that's few,
I'm a family doctor by training. Been practicing. I got my graduate of med school in 82 and my family practice residency in 85. Seen 20,000 patients before I decided to opt into doing a newsletter and share with people the insights I've been learning from natural medicine. And did that in 97. We celebrate our 25th year anniversary this year. This year, it's crazy, 25 years. So we were around before Google, which is another part of the things we can talk about, but definitely before Google. And I'm grateful I was able to do that, because as a clinician, in a clinical lifetime, it's very, very rare where physicians go see over 100,000 patients. Usually it's closer to 50,000. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to impact impact over 100 million lives with the newsletter, because it goes all over the planet and it's the most widely read natural health newsletter in the world. So I'm really grateful for that. But anyway, my passion is getting people healthy, keeping them off of drugs, and really identifying and helping them understand the simple, basic nutritional lifestyle, not necessarily supplements, but nutrition. Lifestyle changes that will radically upregulate your health. So they're basically free or almost no cost. Mm-hmm. We'll go over the main ones today. And the first one, of course, is probably one of the most important, is sunshine.
Doc, can I just quickly ask you before we get into sunshine, now you've got me curious on this element of the story. And I think this is just an interesting takeaway. When you started the newsletter, I assume, I mean, it was an online newsletter, right? So I assume it was just an email-based newsletter.
Never charged for it.
Yeah. Okay. What was it like back then? Because I mean, that was 97. Like, you know, tools like mm-hmm. you know MailChimp and all this sort of stuff didn't exist. Like, what? How did you do it back then?
And like, well, initially we didn't have a big audience. Today we've got well over a million. But back then, you could just do it on. You could basically do it on an Exchange server. So we did it through our mail servers that we had at the office, and then we had to scale and get providers. And there were something like MailChimp that. Mm-hmm. Similar organizations that were available, and I forget the names of the ones we used, but we used those for maybe 5-10 years until we developed we actually purchased our own servers and we deliver everything ourselves now. Yeah, so that's the most efficient way. But then there's a whole other challenge of getting the email you send to be read by someone, because they've got these spam protectors and a whole wide variety that the ISPs use to essentially block or filter or prevent your emails from getting through. But we've got a really sophisticated IT team and pay attention to details. And our delivery rate is, in most of our subgroups, is about 50% or open rate. So
yeah, well, and what inspired you back then? Because that was, I mean, obviously quite rare. You're not just a pioneer in the health space, but you're genuinely a pioneer in like the online education space. Like, what was it that inspired you to go down the internet side of things? Like that genuinely was rare, because these days now everyone's a fucking content producer, but you are like one of the OG content producers.
Yeah, well, I attribute that to my passion for technology. And I took my first computer programming class in 1968. I was online, literally online, in the late 70s, well before the internet. That was the internet, but what we perceive as the World Wide Web, which is probably early 90s. So I've been passionate about that. I had to take a break from like the late 70s to mid 80s because I went to medical school, and that took 6 years out of my life. And I wasn't doing anything but studying and trying mm-hmm. to survive and get through that process, because there's a 10% failure rate. And I didn't want to be one of those 10%. Thankfully, I survived the cut and was able to get through and get my license. So I was always passionate about it. And I knew in the early 90s that the internet was going to be huge. It was beyond obvious. It was clear there was going to be one of the greatest innovations in the history of humanity. And it has been. Unfortunately, it's been bastardized and perverted now, so that this treasure of knowledge, essentially the Library of Alexandria, has been perverted to the point that the information is there. It's online. They can't take it down. At least now they can't. Yeah. But the practical challenge is you can't find it. Mm-hmm. Because 93% of the people in the world, that's almost 100%. It's really close. They use Google as their primary search engine, and Google is censoring most all the information on natural health. They started the process. We were one of the first that they started to censor, and that was about 4 years ago now. They started the process where we were kicked out of the search engine, essentially, for anything but discrediting information.
Of course.
If it's bad, they let it in. If it's anything good about our site or anything, it stays out.
Jesus. Well, I mean, there is hope. There is some stuff being built that will hopefully, you know, turn into Google killers at some point. But, you know, we're going to have to slug it out. We are certainly going to have to slug it out over this coming decade.
You know, I thankfully had a good 20 years to get the message out. And as a result of that, you know, a large segment of the of the awake population that understands what's going on knows of my work, and they know where to find me. So it's strategy. So is that good enough, or do you want to go back? And
No. It's amazing. We could do a whole history bloody lesson, but let's get into the sun. So talk to me about the glorious sun.
The people worship in the sun since the times of ancient, and probably well before that. But there's been this aversion to the sun in modern conventional medicine, especially the dermatologists who perceive it as this skin cancer killer that's taken up so many people, and advised to never get into the sun without sunblock, which is one of the most ludicrous. It's bad. It's not as bad as the COVID jab recommendations, but it's still pretty bad because it just limits your ability to access this powerful tool. So why do you need to be into the sun? Well, the obvious one that almost everyone watching this knows and understands is that's how you get vitamin D. There's a wavelength called ultraviolet B, UVB for short, that shines. Once it shines on your skin, it converts a precursor molecule to vitamin D. Then your vitamin D, your body carries it and metabolizes it further from there. That's the best way. That is the way I recommend everyone get vitamin D. I've been a long proponent of vitamin D for as long as the Lose Letter has been around, for 25 years. And I personally have not swallowed a vitamin D capsule for about 12 to 15 years. I forget when I stopped, but about 12 years, because I think that's once I moved to Florida, I didn't take any vitamin D capsules anymore. So you can measure your vitamin D level. It's called 25-hydroxy-D. And the range should be over 40 nanograms per milliliter in the U.S. For those who are not in the U.S., it's 2.5 times that. So that would be 100. It's 100. 100 to 150 would be the good range. So I just got my test back this week. And my level was 90. 90. That's crazy. Without any supplementation. So you can do it without swallowing vitamin D.
So what's the best time? I know UVB is the important one. And this is, at least as far as I know, they tell you to stay out of the sun between 12 and 2, right? Which, as far as I understand, particularly from your work, is that that's actually the best time to be in the sun, correct?
Yeah, there are some caveats around there. And 12 to 2 is really good because that suggests that it's in the summer, first of all, and in most of the United States. Solar noon is not noon, it's 1 p.m. So it gets shifted forward one because of daylight savings time. So that is the most concentrated time period of UVB. Now, if you don't have a tan, or if you have two other factors that most people are absolutely unaware of, that is, if you're eating too many seed oils in your diet, and that's not by intention, but if you get a lot of seed oils that has this really dangerous omega-6 fat called linoleic acid, that almost everyone has way too much. I mean, it's probably less than 0.1% of people who understand this and practically implement it. But when you get a lot of this dangerous excess omega-6 fat in your skin and you're exposed to the sun, that combo is not a good idea. That can increase the risk of skin cancers and sunburn, both. But if you have a low linoleic acid or low LA diet, is popular in many of the Bitcoin circles now. And I'm not sure, I would love to identify who is responsible for that, because I just want to thank them, because it's such a, I mean, the Bitcoin community seems to be up on this. And I'm surprised, but in some ways, but you know, I'm just delighted. So, and they understand the fact that if you have low linoleic acid diet, you're far less likely to even get sunburned, let alone skin cancer. So that's the caveat. If you have a high LA diet, and you don't have a tan, and you definitely don't want to go out for 12, so you want to build up a solar callus. But vitamin D has so many benefits, and I'm not going to beat a dead horse because it's crazy what it does, aside from just improving your immune system and your resistance to infections like SARS-CoV-2. So the other benefit, there's many other benefits from exposing your skin to sun. One that may be on par with the vitamin D that almost no one knows about is there's one of the most powerful antioxidants in your body, and certainly one of the most ancient antioxidants known to life on this planet, is an antioxidant called melatonin. it was available in plants billions of years before it showed up in humans. It's sort of a highly conserved molecule that is very beneficial to just about all forms of life. And most people know about it for the hormone of darkness that helps improve our sleep. But it has another profoundly effective benefit that virtually no one, I would venture to say 99% of people, including most all physicians, are unaware of this. So you're likely hearing this for the first time. And that is when the sun shines on your skin, it's a wide range of wavelengths. And one of them is UVB that makes vitamin D, but another is infrared A or near infrared. And that near infrared can penetrate your body by several inches, goes deep, whereas most all the wavelengths do not go that deep. There's just superficial, maybe a millimeter or two. So when it goes deep, it hits your mitochondria, which are little organelles in your cells that are responsible for producing energy. And each cell can have 1,000 of them. Some cells in your brain have up to 2 million of them, but most cells have 100 to about 1,000. And they generate all the energy. If you didn't have any mitochondria, you'd be dead literally within probably a second or two. You'd be dead, just would not survive. So and when your mitochondria don't work well, it's really pretty much the cornerstone for almost all chronic disease. And certainly if you want to live a long time and not have chronic degenerative diseases, then improving the ability of your mitochondria to generate energy is a really, really good strategy. Because in the process of making energy, the ATP, there's an exhaust in that machinery. And the exhaust is something called reactive oxygen species, which kicks off and spins off free radicals, which damages your cell tissues, your mitochondria, and pretty much everything it touches. So these antioxidants like melatonin can directly counter that. They stop the damage that those free radicals produce. And they're made right within the mitochondria where these free radicals are generated. So it's a brilliant setup. And 95% of the melatonin your body makes is produced in the mitochondria. Like virtually no one knows that. But it's only made if you're going outside in the sun.
In the sun.
And getting the sun to shine on your skin. So that may be almost every bit as important as vitamin D. And there's no blood test to check for it. There's no commercial assay that will figure this thing out. So, but just know that it happens. It's a brilliant system. But there's other benefits. There's more.
Quickly on that one. So is it also similar? Because I know you can go to Whole Foods, for example, and get melatonin tabs.
Nope. It will not work that way.
Okay. So that stuff's all useless, basically, right?
There may be some benefit.
Okay.
And interestingly, I've been waiting for a long time to interview, but the chief scientist and researcher in the entire world is Russell Reiter. He's been doing this for 30, 40 years. And he actually wrote the seminal paper 2 years ago about this, what I just explained about the melatonin and the mitochondria. So he personally takes about 100 milligrams a day. And I want to have a really interesting debate or dialogue with him on that. So I have to respectfully submit to his genius. I mean, the guy, there may be some benefit, but I'm concerned that the best way to do it is naturally and not take a supplement. We were never designed to be taking supplements. Mm-hmm, you know, if you can do it with something just as easily as what our ancestors did, then let's go with that. And it's a lot less expensive.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I've always been a believer of I've always just had the sneaking suspicion. This is also why I don't drink, I don't take drugs, I don't do any of this sort of stuff, is that I think it desensitizes you in some way, like taking supplements. I think that if you can do any of these things naturally,
I take a lot myself, and certain people choose lifestyles like being a vegan. I think unless you do take supplements, you're going to definitely die prematurely. So I think you have to be really, really careful. And if your goal is to take no supplements, which I think, if you're optimizing health, it's almost impossible. There's so many basic things that are simple. And the supplement can be even a drug. I've incorporated a drug that I'm not sure if we'll have time to discuss, but the oldest drug in the world, you know what that drug is? It's older than aspirin.
Okay, what is it?
I'll give you a hint. It's a textile dye used to dye blue jeans. So it has blue in its name. It's methylene blue.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Is that like something to do with B12 or no?
No, it's totally separate.
Okay, that's something
else. But interestingly, it works kind of like melatonin does. It works primarily in the mitochondria to radically lower oxidative stress and improve your energy. So if you're tired with fatigue, and it's interesting, it's the precursor or the parent molecule of one of the drugs that we know works for SARS-CoV-2, which is hydroxychloroquine. The parent molecule, hydroxychloroquine is actually derived from methylene blue. And it was first used to treat malaria in 1890, discovered in 1876. So it's a pretty profoundly effective. And I actually use it as a supplement, even though it's a drug. I take very tiny amounts. You can buy a bottle on Amazon for like $17. It's 25,000 milligrams. And that would last you almost 5 years. That's how much.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It takes such a small amount. You know, it's like 10 milligrams twice a day. So it lasts a long time.
Okay. So sun, UVB, near infrared. What's the difference quickly between near infrared and far infrared? Like, and what sort of
more wavelength? Important? It's just there's a longer wavelength. Okay. So the wavelengths are typically measured in nanometers. So near infrared is somewhere about 650, 700 to 1100 nanometers. Then you have mid infrared from that point up to, I think, 2000, 2500 nanometers. And then I forget the cutoff for far infrared, how high it goes up. But far infrared does not penetrate as deeply. And that's, you know, I don't have time to go into it now, but there's a huge reason. The most sauna is another hack. It's sort of an advanced hack, but I think everyone who's a serious student of health should consider. Problem is that most saunas are far infrared, and I do not like far infrared saunas. I think some of them can work. The vast majority, in my estimation, over 95% are worthless, and many of those, if not most, are potentially harmful.
Why are they harmful?
Because they're putting off pollution in the form of EMF, usually very high electrical fields, and some magnetic fields also. So you want to, I need a half hour to kind of go into details of why that is, but sauna is a profoundly beneficial strategy to optimize your health. Something that you don't do every day, but the almost all the work is out of Finland, where I think there's more saunas than telephones. every house has one. But the studies who use it, and they have a different type of sauna. It's not far for us. It's called a Finnish sauna. And they use, in Finland, they can use wood to heat it up, but the one Finnish saunas in the U.S. typically use electric heaters, which generate electric fields. So you have this issue, but it heats by convection. It's typically about 170, 180, maybe even up to 200 degrees. So that's where all the data was generated on the longevity benefits, and radically decreased up to 50% in all-cause mortality, which is crazy. In people who use saunas more frequently, like 3 to 4 times a week. You don't want to use sauna every day because it's not a good strategy because you can deplete many minerals. But 3 to 4 times a week is probably the sweet spot. And most far infrared saunas only go up to about 140, maybe 150. So they're not going to get that hot. But near infrared saunas work much better, even though they go up to maybe a little bit higher if you have enough bulbs, but they penetrate a lot deeper. You know, that's the whole thing. Just like I mentioned, the near infrared sauna goes into at least three inches into your body. So that heat goes right in. It's not a dry heat.
Okay. Is near infrared a function of the level of heat or the thing that is giving off the heat?
It's a characteristic. It's the length of the wavelength. It's about 600 nanometers long. So if it meets those characteristics, it's near infrared. But most people aren't aware. Only about 7% of the radiation from the sun comes in the UV range.
Mm-hmm.
40%. 40%
is infrared, which is heat.
Is near, no, not just infrared. It's near infrared.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Most of the radiation coming from the sun is near infrared.
Okay. So those saunas, for example, that are like heated with, you know, wood and stones.
They will work. I mean, that's really the only data we have scientifically to prove that they work is from those types of saunas.
Okay. And they emanate near infrared because that's the type of heat that is produced.
That's a good question. They don't really, unless it's glowing, because you can, I mean, if it was a fire, I guess it would. The fire definitely has near infrared, but it's more of a heat. So it's like a convection heat. It's not really any wavelengths of light that's coming out. It's just the heat. So the heat is this increase in the molecules moving, which is just, you know, it's experienced as an increase in heat or temperature. So it's not any of those wavelengths.
Okay, so you kind of want both, do you? You want the actual red light.
There's another aspect of biohacking, which is advanced, even more advanced than sauna. It's called photobiomodulation, mm-hmm. where you're exposed to red and near infrared frequencies. And yes, with the near infrared sauna, you can get something called photobiomodulation, which you cannot get with far infrared and which you cannot get with a finished sauna. So that's why I'm a huge fan of near infrared saunas. You can hack it with a heat lamp bulb, which are about $10, and build your own. But those bulbs only have about 14% near infrared, whereas more sophisticated bulbs are developed by Sauna Space, which is a company, Sauna Space, one word. Mm-hmm. They make bulbs that are 40% near infrared, and you can actually construct a sauna. They actually have a panel that has four of these bulbs that you can buy and make your own sauna, or convert your existing far infrared sauna into a near infrared and make it much, much better and safer.
Would that be by replacing the bulbs or kind of placing the bulbs in there along with
far infrared sauna doesn't have bulbs. They have these like ceramic heaters or usually in the back. So they don't have bulbs. They just have these ceramic plates. Most of them have that there's another type of far infrared that heat generator that you can use, but that's what most of them use, these ceramic plates.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, see, I was always under the impression that, infrared, as far as I understood, was more like heat waves as opposed to the visible component of the spectrum. But what I'm hearing is that
if you use a water heater to make coffee, you know, those little pots you plug in, that's not, there's no infrared in that. It's just a heater, a coil that just generates heat. Mm-hmm. And heat your water up, and there's no infrared involved at all. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, it's the same thing with the finished saunas.
Good to know. Okay, so like kind of the ideal, if someone wanted to build their own thing, for example, would be to build a finished sauna and then install some lights from Sauna Space that
Well, fortunately, they come in panels, like a panel mm-hmm, of four. Mm-hmm. So that produces 1,000 watts of heat coming out. That's a lot of heat. I actually use two of these panels. I've pretty much been doing this for a number of years, so I've got pretty good at it. So I can tolerate more heat because you have to slowly build up a tolerance to it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can get in problems. But that's an advanced topic. The most important thing is just getting in the sun. And it's free. Because one of those panels from Sauna Space is about $1,000. Now, this may sound like a lot, but it's a lot cheaper than a far infrared sauna. And it's far healthier too.
Mm-hmm. So those panels, they can also, because when you said before photobiomodulation therapy, or that's basically red light therapy, right? And that seems to be probably
near infrared, maybe more important. Mm-hmm. But there's other light frequencies you can use too. But the two conventional ones are red and near infrared.
Okay, red and near infrared light therapy. Okay, so the panels that you're talking about, They're specifically near infrared light panels.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, mostly 40% of the
40%. Okay.
Yeah, comes near, and then I mean maybe 30% is maybe for another 40% is mid, and then I think 10 or 20% is the far.
Okay.
So relatively and small far.
Does far infrared mean that it's kind of coming just into the visible spectrum, or is that moving out into?
No. The further off you go, the more invisible it comes. We can barely see infrared. You can definitely see red. And then the higher up you go into near infrared, as it progresses to 900 or 1,000 nanometers, it's invisible. You cannot see it.
Okay. And that's where you're going into EMFs, right?
No. EMFs are something completely different.
It's all a spectrum, right? So it kind of the direction you're going in, right?
Yeah, it depends. If you're looking at magnetic fields, that's much lower on the spectrum, and electrical fields certainly are much, much lower. I mean, we're talking nanometers, which is, I think it's tens or hundreds of millions of these pulses per second, whereas these electrical fields are in 1,000 or 10,000 cycles per second. Mm-hmm. So they're all on the spectrum, but they're a totally different part of the spectrum.
Yeah. Okay. So just coming back to the sun. So you want to get in the sun. It's the freest way to do it. You're getting your UVB, you're getting your near infrared, you're getting the whole spectrum basically.
Yeah.
I know you've mentioned before, it's like you want to get as much of your skin as possible in the sun, right? Because you want to, I assume that's to maximize the surface area, correct?
Right, 100%. Yeah.
Have you come across any of the stuff about like sunning your genitals and stuff like that, that a lot of people
do? I have. I think there's some value to that if you can do it, obviously, without getting arrested. So yeah, I personally have not done that. Although when I do photobiomodulation or I do my sauna, I'm certainly without clothes.
Yeah, naked. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do get it that way, but I don't do sun. So I don't get the UV on my testicles. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's probably some benefit because you can probably produce some of the vitamin D locally. But the I didn't finish the benefits because they're so
yes.
other.
Yeah, yeah, so let's go.
So you have UVB making vitamin D, but UVA increases nitric oxide in your skin. And then, so, and there's still another one, it's like with melatonin, which is the near infrared. You actually, the near infrared also, in addition to making melatonin, structures the water in your body. Gerald Pollack's done a lot of work out of this at the University of Washington, wrote the book, The Fourth Phase of Water. And it's a really important thing. Some people drink structured water, but it's far more important to have your body make structured water than to drink it. So your body can make it if it's exposed to near infrared.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so that's an interesting one. That one's definitely one I haven't heard of. And what's basically the benefit of making structured water? What does that do in your body?
Well, one of the primary ones is to move the blood cells along because some people think that it's the heart that has the energy to move. Well, certainly the heart plays a role, but the red blood cells are actually bigger than the capillaries and they have to squeeze through there and they actually they extract the energy from the structured water to do that. So it's really important for movement of many of your body fluids.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So, all right. Nitric oxide, what's that for? That's to do with blood flow, right? Or?
Well, optimizing blood pressure. So
blood pressure,
especially high blood pressure, this is important for you because nitric oxide opens up the blood vessels, helps them to relax. It dilates the blood vessels, makes them wider. So, but it's always a balance. I mean, you obviously can, too much nitric oxide is a problem too, and it probably causes more harm than good. So you want to have your body make it normally. When it's exposed to sun, it does that, and you know, you're off to the races.
Mm-hmm. Do we have more in this catalog of benefits that are worth mentioning here?
There's certainly more, but those are the primary ones.
Okay. It's interesting. So when I was young, probably when I was like 14, 15, I had my grandmother was like brainwashed by the medical establishment. Like she was a walking fucking pharmacy, right? She had stomach problems, rheumatoid arthritis, heart problems, diabetes, fucking you name it. She had everything. And her cabinet was like full of drugs. And when I was young, like the excess, I went through quite a difficult period as a young kid with, you know, family divorces and all this sort of stuff. And, and kind of moving out when I was 14 and I went to look after my grandma and I developed these stomach ulcers and her solution to everything was to pump me full of Losec at the time, which was this drug for your stomach.
It's probably Prilosec, which is omeprazole. It's a proton pump inhibitor.
Yeah. So whatever it was, it destroyed my stomach and basically destroyed my immune system when I was young. And it was funny. I just had this intuition for some reason. And I think I have to credit some of my, like, I had a good intuition from being young. So like I would go out and I would just start exposing myself to the sun and running. And, you know, my grandma was always like, oh, you're going to die. The sun's going to kill you. You're going to get cancer or some shit like that. And, you know, I would sneak out and go and run. And it was kind of around that time I was.
Yeah, like, Australia. You're from Australia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're really rigorous about that. There's just this mythology out there. It's much worse than the United States.
Totally. They're absolutely insane. Slip, slop, slap. You know, we've got the whole slogan about it, right? And anyway, I kind of bucked that trend. And I think what helped reinforce a lot of that was it was around that time where I believe that I started discovering a lot of your work. Now, you know, it helped, you know, establish that kind of thinking. I mean, I really got into your stuff in my kind of early 20s by the time I left home and things like that. But it's interesting how, you know, the dividends of spending time in the sun at that particular point in time, like people look at me and they say, oh, you're just naturally dark because you're Mediterranean. And I'm actually not. when I was younger, I was like super white, but now I'm dark and it doesn't matter. I can go in the sun. I was in the sun for an hour in the middle of the day in Texas and I'm fine. There's nothing there. And I guess I just want to point this out because I know there's a lot of people who are probably going to be listening and thinking that, well, I'm too white to go in the sun. I'm too light. You know, my skin's too sensitive. But I think you mentioned it before is you actually build calluses in a sense of like exposing yourself consistently to the sun, right?
Yeah. And it does that by the production of a hormone called melanin, which is the pigment that your body makes from the melanocytes in your skin cells. So, and exposure to the sun will help cause that or catalyze that because it's a protector. Some people have too much melanin. Like if you're African American, their requirements for sun exposure are 2, 3, 4 times as much, depending on how dark they are. I mean, they may need 2 or 3 hours of sun. And my practice was in Chicago. I was seeing patients, which is a pretty high latitude. I think it's like 40 degrees. You know, Central America, where you're fond of staying, me too, is like single digit latitude. Florida is like 25 degrees, but the higher north you go, the worse it is. And there were so many African-American patients I was taking care of that were sick as a dog, you know, and they essentially had almost no vitamin D because they're not going. I mean, even if they lived in Central America, most of them are not going to go outside because of their job. But in Chicago, it's almost, you only have like a 3-month window where you can get any amount of vitamin D to make, or solar UV radiation to get vitamin D. So they were really low. And, you know, the deeply pigmented people do not do well living in high latitudes at all. They should not live in high latitudes. They can do it, but it's not healthy for them at all.
Yeah, well, so man, it's interesting the wisdom of the body and nature and how we've kind of adapted. Okay, so is there anything else you want to mention about the sun, or shall we close that chapter and kind of move into some other stuff?
No, that pretty much covers it. You know, it's simple; everyone can do it. You just have to make time to do it, and you know, it's a resource that most of us don't have enough of. Mm-hmm. So, ideally, it's best to multitask. So, rather than go outside and lay in a chase lounge or, you know, just vegetate for an hour or so, you could actually walk and get some movement, you know, and do something. So that's
surprise.
And then you can still listen to like podcasts or books or music if you want. And, you know, so you're doing 3 things at once, you know, so you can justify it and you can fit it into your schedule and still live a pretty extraordinary life.
Yeah, I think that is actually really important to mention I think you need the discipline to go out and jump in the sun. But yeah, if as you said, you don't have to just go and like do nothing.
Yeah, that's a mistake. I walk on the beach every day and 90% of people are just sitting there or laying down doing nothing. And that's better than at home doing the same thing, but it's still, why don't they up their game? I can miss a lot of people I've met on the beach that get out from the, you know, sitting down and now they're walking, you know, and they're optimizing their health because that's the best thing.
Walking is actually interesting. So when I was younger, I used to, you know, think walking's for idiots, but the more mature I've become, I've realized that walking actually, I think more importantly, even than running is extraordinarily important for, I guess, not just mobility, but I think it kind of, and maybe you've got some more, you know, scientific sort of a scientific position on this, but I feel better now that I've started walking. I walk 2-3 times a week in the sun. And, you know, sometimes I feel guilty. I'm like, oh, maybe I should run instead so I can burn more calories. No. But the walking kind of seems to like, I don't know, put motion and movement or something into my joints and I feel better, like posturally, structurally, like my integrity feels stronger. So is there something about walking that people should know?
Well, it's just, I think we were designed to do that. I mean, you can run, and I ran for over 40 years before I stopped because I had this competitive nature. So
I'm talking about that.
So, but in retrospect, I think it's kind of foolish, and the time spent running could better be invested in resistance training to build more muscle mass, and just using the walking and multitasking it with other activities so that you can be more comprehensively balanced.
Have you? Because I've got flat feet, so I went to a an osteopath the other week, and he gave me these pads for my feet so that I'm sort of more biomechanically structured. Is there? Do you know anything about that kind of stuff?
And well, I'm not an expert in it, but there are people who are. And from what I might recall, one of the problems with that is that we just wear shoes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the solutions is not wearing shoes. And when you're walking, one of the things that failed to mention is I'm wearing a hat, so I'm not wearing sunscreen. I'm not wearing sunglasses. And I'm not wearing, sure the hell, I'm not wearing shoes on the beach. I'm walking barefoot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'll walk 5-6 miles pretty much almost every day barefoot. And I mean, I only wear shoes when I'm normally here. I'm not traveling.
Mm-hmm.
I probably wear shoes maybe 10 minutes a week, maybe 5 minutes a week. Usually go to the store because they want me without shoes. And that's it. I don't even wear my workout, my trainer. So it's probably closer to 5 minutes, however long it takes me to get in the store, which I go to once a week. Mm-hmm.
It's funny, Jack Dorsey, when I met him in Costa Rica, like he does a walk every single morning. Basically, I think it's like 5-6 miles. He basically walks down the beach and back, and he does that religiously every single day. It's an interesting thing.
Without shoes,
of course. Yeah, of course. In the sunshine, on the beach, beautiful part of the world. You can kind of see, I mean, particularly since he left Twitter, you can see like how much more radiant his, his skin and everything looks. So it's a beautiful thing. Is there also something about walking barefoot, to do with like grounding,
Well, that's a good question. If you're not in North America, you can ground. You can ground North America, but it's not going to be healthy because of the contamination of the ground current with dirty electricity. So Central America is fine, but not North America. I mean, Mexico, Canada, U.S. Unless you're in some really rural areas or you're on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Because the beach, the grounding you get from the ocean is the strongest you can get in the entire world. Ocean is, it's the biggest sink of electrons. So the downside is that, like last week, I got caught in a thunderstorm, which is rare. I mean, I think the last thunderstorm I got was like 6 or 9 months ago. But you got to know when you see lightning in the sky, that is a danger signal, because if your feet are in the ocean, you're grounded, and lightning likes to go to ground. So you're the antenna that it's going to. So you got to get out of the water. So, walk on the dry part of the beach. Very important, because lightning strikes can kill you. So
I thought they'd turn you into like a superhero or something. That's what Disney told me.
Not in this lifetime. So you can get grounding on the ocean pretty much anywhere in the world, and certainly in the United States. So not only do I walk on the beach, but I walk in the water on the beach so that optimizes the grounding.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so that's another nice little hack that is also free that everyone should be doing. That's one thing I've genuinely missed, having spent a bit of time in the US and kind of in Texas. I miss the ocean much, man. Fuck.
Yeah, I will not live unless I'm in an area unless I'm next to the ocean. It's not going to work. It's a non-starter for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how people do it. Okay, so sun, grounding, walking. We've spoken about sauna, red light therapy. You touched quickly on seed oils. So I'm definitely squarely in the camp of seed oil disrespecters, not respecters. And it's funny, I've always kind of had that bent, and it might have even been once again from your work or someone or something similar that I read back in the day that. It's not so much about just the omega-6, it's more to do with the omega-6-3 ratio, right? So can you talk me through both, the ratio and, how prevalent linoleic acid is?
Commonly understood is that it's the ratio that's important, but I'm pretty much convinced it's not. I mean, the ratio, you need some omega-3, but the main issue is almost everyone has too much omega-6. Almost everyone. And increasing omega-3 without decreasing omega-6 is going to make
doesn't help. Worse. Oh, really?
Yeah, because they're both highly perishable fats. You need some omega 3, but in excess, it's going to be oxidized and it's going to spin off these free radicals, which will just, I mean, really toxic free radicals, like some things like 4-hydroxynonenal, 4-HNE for short, and hundreds of other oxlams, which, or actually ALEs would be a better description. ALE is an acronym for advanced lipoxidation end products. You may have heard of AGEs before, advanced glycolation end products. That's with diabetes. Those are AGEs, but ALEs are when it comes to fats. So they're really toxic as hell. So you really want to lower it. We are, you know, if you dial the clock back, to 1860, maybe 1866 is when the first industrialized seed oil started. And at that time, or even pre-1900, because they didn't really take off until about past 1900, pre-1900, we only 1 to 2% of our diet, 1 to 2% of our diet was consisted of this omega-6 fat. That's it. Crazy low. And at that level, we had virtually no chronic disease. You know how many heart attacks we had before 1900?
Tell me. In
the United States.
Less than, I don't know, 1,000 a year? I don't know.
In the entire history before 1900, they can't even find 10.
Yeah, wow.
It didn't exist. It didn't exist. It didn't exist. Now it's the number one cause of death. And you can make a really strong argument. Of course, the science hasn't been done to confirm this and validate it, but you can satisfy, I mean, it's definitely causal correlations that exist, but causal is something else, but you can use these sophisticated Brandon Hill criteria to make that argument. So the evidence from my point of perspective is pretty clear that it's the linoleic acid that's causing heart attacks and heart disease and sunburn and skin cancer, because it also contributes to cancer. And the same time before 1900, we had less than 1% of the population dying from cancer, less than maybe 0.5%. Do you know what that percentage is today?
Yeah, no, it's in the double digits, right?
33%.
Yeah.
1 out of 3 people are dying from cancer. 1 out of 3.
Jesus Christ.
1 out of 3. It was less than 1 in 100. So cancer existed, unlike heart disease, but cancer existed before 1900. Heart disease essentially didn't. Those are two big ones, you know. Then you have dementia, which is another epidemic, and it's bad, pretty bad to lose your mind. Sauna can help prevent that too, because it helps. When you get into sauna, you generate something called heat shock proteins, and that can help refold the proteins, and misfolded proteins are a major reason why people get demented.
I think you and I think Tony talked about this in the episode that you guys did together, right? About the shock proteins.
Yeah. I don't think he knew that. I'm pretty sure he did.
I think that was the one that you brought up. Yeah, that's right.
Because I wasn't going to let, I was going to challenge Tony. I think was, most people just let him talk. You know? I says, no. I've got more experience than you in this. I'm
totally
in conversation.
Totally. You're the king of this. With omega-6s, so my naive interpretation or my limited interpretation of why it causes a lot of these problems is something to do with inflammation, right? Is like inflammation.
No, that's a very relatively minor component. It's oxidation.
Okay.
Oxidation. So remember, there's another term for omega 3 and 6 is PUFA, polyunsaturated fatty acids. The unsaturated fat is a double bond. That double bond is highly, highly susceptible. It's very perishable. So when exposed to extra pressure, extra oxygen, radiation,
sunlight, heat,
temperature, that will easily damage these bonds. That's why you have to keep these, you know, like foods like in a really cold environment and in the dark, you know, you don't otherwise you spoil. So it's the same things that happen. They essentially spoil and get damaged. And the reason why these PUFAs, you know, the high PUFA diet is some people refer to it as that too. And it's technically just as accurate as a high LA diet, because a PUFA is an LA. An LA is a PUFA. There's many PUFAs, but it's certainly the most pernicious one. So when you have large amounts of these oxidations going on, it's just going to damage all your tissues. And the there's a lot of confusion because most doctors, I'd say, we're talking well over 95% of physicians. Natural medicine physicians, probably 99.9% of all physicians, believe that sugar is more harmful than fat. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nothing could be further from the truth. So sugar, you don't want to be eating lots of sugar. That is not a good idea. I mean, by sugar, I'm talking about refined sugar. So to me, but the, one of the most dangerous things of refined sugar is when you're eating it in processed foods. Typically, if you're eating sugar from processed food, almost guaranteed, now this is not true for all foods, but almost guaranteed, there's going to be more linoleic acid in that food than there is a sugar. So you're not just getting a sugar, you're getting linoleic acid.
You get them both. It's a double whammy.
It's in all processed foods, but in, usually in higher amounts. So, but even if you had sugar by itself, versus linoleic acid by itself, it's much more dangerous. And probably one of the primary reasons is that it gets, it sticks around a long time. The half-life is like 600 to 650 days. That's 2 years of half-life, which means it's in, you ingest it today, 95% of it will be gone in 5 years. Five freaking years. Five years. If you have a sugar, a candy bar or something, assuming
it's like burning through you,
Yeah, it's gone within hours. Does its damage and it's gone. Now, is that a good idea to eat that all the time? No, especially because it's usually associated with linoleic acid. But, or even pure sugar, you could get away with it. That's why sugar is not intrinsically evil. In fact, you need some. I'm not a big believer in a low-carb diet for long term for anyone. For some people who are obese and, you know, we're looking at, you know how, you know what the percentage of overweight people is in the United States? Take a guess. Obese, not overweight. Obese.
Yeah, that one is like up in the 60s, right? Or no, is 40, it that high? 40. 40 okay. 43. Okay. Obese. Okay. Overweight is like over.
Overweight
in the
60s, is
right?
Closer to 80%.
Yeah. Okay.
Jesus. So we're 43% obese. Well, we're talking obese. It's supposed to be 50% by the end of this decade, 2030. 50%. One out of two people obese. So, and guess what is the primary cause of obesity?
Linoleic acid, I assume.
Linoleic acid, yeah. 100%. And diabetes, because diabetes is correlated really strongly. So diabetes is the other disease that's exploded. And it's not because of sugar. It is not because of sugar. It is not because of sugar. It's because of linoleic acid.
That's such an important point. Thank you for repeating that as well, because I think everyone is so like... Man, it's funny how like, you know, our grandma's like recipe, for example, for cookies was like butter and sugar and like, you know, some raw milk and, you know, they'd make cookies.
I don't know if they put raw, probably raw eggs, I would think.
Or eggs. Yeah. Sorry. Eggs and whatever the fuck goes into it. But it was like.
Milk was like similar to butter, right?
So, but how much different were they then versus what they are now, right? Like,
because they're not using butter. They swap the butter for linoleic acid. So you can still make healthy pastries. You actually still can have relatively healthy French fries if you didn't use seed oils. You know, McDonald's used to use beef tallow, which is a safe fat to cook in. Only about 1 to 2% of seed of linoleic acid. That's it. As opposed to most seed oils, which would be 70% linoleic acid. It's crazy.
Is beef tallow high in omega-3 though? Is that kind of...
No, it's not high in omega-3 at all. I mean, it has some. But what is high in, and this is the distinction, because one of the most common questions is, well, what can I cook with? There's three primary things you can cook with. Beef tallow probably being one of the best. You can also cook with ghee, which is a type of butter, where it's clarified, where the protein is removed. And you could use coconut oil. Coconut oil is very safe, has virtually no linoleic acid. What it doesn't have also are the vitamins, fat-soluble vitamins. So ghee and beef tallow, they have things like vitamin K2 and vitamin A, which is probably every bit as important as vitamin D, and it gets no attention.
And that's because they're animal products, I assume?
Animal fats, right.
Yeah, okay.
So the animal fats have these nutrients, these micronutrients that are not available in plant fats. So you can cook safely with coconut oil, but you can't get the nutrition from it.
See, what I generally do is see, like, I'll slow cook some meat. And tell me if this is a good idea. So I'll slow cook some meat. Let's say it's brisket or beef ribs or something like that. And then I'll actually skim the fat off and I'll keep the fat and I'll actually cook my stuff later with that fat. Is that a good idea? Yeah.
Or you can just eat it.
Well, I do both. Yeah, exactly. I eat the stuff when it's there, but if I have excess.
Yeah, because you want to minimize your heating. You know, I've gotten to the point where I'm cooking with cook. I didn't cook. I mean, I cooked all my meat, of course, but it was typically very slow through an Instapot. But then I started eating lamb, and lamb doesn't taste good when you cook it that way. It just doesn't. It's almost unpalatable. But once I cooked it in like a lamb burger, and it really is really, really good. That's my favorite. But the point of that is you really want to limit the amount of high heat you're using to cook, because there is some linoleic acid in all those foods. It's relatively small, but when you heat it, you're going to damage it for sure. So you want to heat it as little as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, noted. Quick question on coconut oil and sunlight. So I used to do this a lot. I don't do it as much anymore, but I used to basically rub coconut oil on my skin before going out in the sun. Is that a good idea? Or
probably not necessary for you unless you have dry skin. What I did notice, I don't have dry skin at all, but because I was walking on the beach in the salt water pretty much every day, I started getting these really dry skin patches on my heels. But it was because I was walking in salt water every day, which is dries it out.
Yeah,
if you have a wet lesion, that's one of the things you do is you soak it in a salt solution. So it just sucks the moisture out of your skin. So in those types of scenarios, you're going to want to add a moisturizer like coconut. But I think there's better ones than coconut.
What, for your skin? Like when you're out in the sun? Like what's a good one, for example?
Shea butter would be one. And
okay,
there's just a number of different oils that you can use. I mean, is that dangerous with coconut? But I think there's just better one.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I always thought that coconut oil had some sort of, you know, slightly protective mechanism from burning, but maybe that's a myth.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. The major reason you burn is too much linoleic acid.
Yeah. Okay.
There's virtually no linoleic acid in coconut oil. So you're not going to have a problem that way, but it's just not necessary, especially for someone like you. You can put it on your heels. Do you walk in the ocean regularly?
Man, I've been in the ocean for a while. Oh, okay. So deeply miss it.
Yeah. Now, when you start doing it, I think you might have, it takes a while to build it up, but you'll start getting dry heels. That's what I noticed.
Okay. So, all right. So linoleic acid is the devil. And basically it's not just about the ratio between O3 and O6. It's the total quantum of each.
And the best way to get the omega-3 is from eating some small fish. Like I do mackerel twice a week.
Mm-hmm. Is there not a decent amount of omega-3 in like egg yolks and stuff like
no,
that?
No.
You're
omega-3 deficient if you rely on egg yolks. You theoretically can get them. Yeah, if you fed your chickens fish, probably would have enough. And actually, I think we might be doing that when I'm going to this land development, that person who's responsible for
aquaponics.
It's aquaponics, and we're probably going to raise tilapia on algae and feed the excess tilapia to the chickens. So I'm going to get the eggs measured and stuff, but they'll probably be really high, not just omega-3 with the generic, which is typically ALA, which is the plant-based version of omega-3, and your cell body still has to convert that to EPA and DHA. Interestingly, this is something that I just learned recently, is that conversion is by an enzyme delta-6 desaturase, and that enzyme is inhibited when you have lots of linoleic acid. So that when you're eating lots of LA, you can't make the ALA that you eat, which is the the 18 carbon omega-3 fat, plant fat that's in many plants. You can't convert it as well to the other.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
You have a high linoleic acid diet. So, an interesting tidbit.
Yeah, basically, the shit gets in the way of everything. So okay. So, the
EOS, evil on steroids.
That's not a
shit coin, you know?
It's both. Okay, two other ones I want to touch on really quickly here is fasting. I know, you know, you're sort of not a major proponent of fasting, at least for certain people.
Fasting is good for some people who are overweight. Typically, you know, the 80% of people are overweight. So it's a good idea because they're insulin resistant, they're metabolically inflexible, they're an accident waiting to happen for their health. So. Fasting will accelerate the progression to metabolic flexibility and and ability to feel much better quickly. So I'm a huge advocate. But once you're in a healthy range, like someone like you or me should not be fasting. Mm-hmm. Regular fasting, 3 to 5 day water fast I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. There's another type of fasting called intermittent fasting, which mm-hmm. is everyone should do.
And this is basically eating in a particular window, right? So you eat the 4, 6, 8 window, right?
Yeah, intermittent fasting could be like you don't eat one day a week or eat every other day. Mm-hmm. But so the subset that I refer to is more accurately is time-restricted eating, where you're eating a 6 or 8 hour window.
Yeah, it's funny. Right now I do it not very regularly, kind of rarely, maybe once every couple of months. I'll do like my little hack is my final meal will be 6 p.m. on a Friday. And then my first meal back will be lunch on a Sunday, right? So then I've had 2 sleeps, and you kind of use the sleep to your advantage mm-hmm. to let your
body. What time do you go to bed?
It depends. I'm trying to bring it earlier now. I'm trying to get down to like 10 p.m., ideally 9:30 or 9 p.m. But, you know, since I've been traveling last couple of years, I've been going to bed at midnight, which is a disaster.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So 6 o'clock works pretty well. Then you have a 6-hour window. But your timing actually works pretty well for your circadian rhythm, but your circadian rhythm is screwed. Mm-hmm. You're really off by 3 to 4 hours. So it's less than optimal. And that's another thing that you get for free, because there's a real important biomolecule called NAD+, which I'm sure you've mm-hmm. heard about. It's called mm-hmm. nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. And it's really important part of the energy production process in your body. And if you've ever taken biochemistry, you study this, but in the late 1990s, David Sinclair figured out that there's much more important processes than just in energy production. And that actually serves as fuel for a few important enzyme systems, specifically ones that make your body live long, called longevity proteins or sirtuins, and other ones that actually repair the DNA damage in your body, like PARP, which is essentially takes out about 150 molecules every time it gets activated to repair your DNA. So you need a lot of NAD. And one of the most, there's this point to this. I just wanted to preface what NAD was. So there's an enzyme that's the rate-limiting enzyme that makes NAD. It's called NAMPT. And there's like 3 things you can do to really upregulate that enzyme. And it's also important to note that as you age, this function of this enzyme becomes rapidly broken. It goes radically decreases. And it's my view, and that of some other people I know, that it's not so much a matter of age. It's just what happens when people get older. Okay. What happens? They stop exercising. If you don't exercise, this enzyme is going to go to shit.
Okay.
You know, so you've got to exercise.
So the NAMPT is increased through exercise and resistance.
Hard exercise, vigorous. I mean, not just walking. Walking will do it, but not much. I mean, you really got to push it. You got to hit it, you know, crush it.
Okay. So is this kind of, NAMPT, I haven't heard of this one actually. I mean, or maybe I've heard it by its full name, but is this where NMN sort of comes into the realm as well?
If you're a biohacker, you've certainly heard of NMN. Another one is NR, nicotinamide riboside, and is nicotinamide mononucleotide. Well, it turns out that those are all precursors of NAD. They're very expensive, maybe $100 a month, maybe a few hundred dollars a month. So the only thing you really, there's only simple things. You can just exercise. And if you want to make it better, you exercise when you're fasting. So after 18 hours not eating, then you do your exercise, and then you jump in the sauna, and then you max it out. But there's one other important thing that's crucial for making NAD that you're not doing. That is optimizing your circadian rhythm. Because unless you're going to bed close to sunset and getting up at sunrise, you're depriving your body of that opportunity. Now, like if you're getting up at sunrise, but you're going to bed 3 or 4 hours after sunset, then you're probably not getting enough sleep. If you're only getting 6 hours, you need more than 6 hours. Most everyone needs 7 to 8. And ideally, you're not waking up with an alarm. You let your body wake up when it needs to. So that's a key. So you now have to integrate the circadian rhythm. And the other thing you can do is you can get the best precursor. This is advanced stuff, but it's so cheap. You get niacinamide powder, because when your body metabolizes NAD and uses it, it converts it to niacinamide.
That's B6, right? Or is it B3? Or
no, it's B3.
B3, that's the one. And that's the one that gives you like the red flush or the hot flush?
No, that's niacin. Niacinamide does not, especially the dose that I'm recommending. Now, it usually comes as a 500 or 1,000 milligram tablet. That's how much you need. You only need 50 milligrams. That's where you get the powder. You take a 1/64 of a teaspoon. A 1/64. More is not better. It is actually worse. So if you take a half a teaspoon, forget it. Forget it. It's not going to work. It'll actually make you worse.
Oh, really?
Because a high dose niacinamide actually inhibits your longevity proteins. It stops because it stops the production because it's a negative feedback. So you don't want to take 10 times more than you need. You want to only take 50 milligrams three times a day. So that's the ultimate hack. And that will cost you less than a penny a day.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, and when do you want to take that?
A month. Instead of $100 to $200 a month, $300.
Yeah, Jesus. Okay. So when do you want to take that? Is that like a post-workout or is that kind of like any time in the day? Or?
Well, you can take it three times a day, divided doses. Okay. I usually take it right before I work out. So before my morning workout, before I go to the beach, and then before I go to bed. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Okay. So it's just 50 milligrams and...
A 1/64 of a teaspoon of the powder. Because you can't buy a 50 milligram tablet. It doesn't exist.
Uh-huh. So you got to go and get powder instead. Okay.
And a 1/64 of a teaspoon measuring spoon. Not a 32nd, mm-hmm. a 1/64.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm writing this down because it's going to go in the show notes. 1/64 of a teaspoon. Okay. Wow. All right. That's really interesting to know. So
I figured that out, actually. I was one of the first to report that. And then just literally 2 weeks ago, there was a study published in rats showing that was the dose. It was like 2 milligrams per kilogram, which comes out to about 50 milligrams three times a day. 2 milligrams per it like tripled the dose of NAD in these rats. It was crazy. I mean, it's basically free. You know, a bag is like cost $10 and will last you 7 years.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And is it relatively stable? Like, you know, like
yeah, just keep it in the jar. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I keep mine in the fridge unless I'm using it. I just keep it on a kitchen counter. Mm-hmm.
And so your body takes the niacinamide and it breaks it into NAD. Is that right? Is that the process or is it the other way around?
The NAD? The NAMPT will convert the niacinamide to actually convert it to NMN. And then NMN gets converted by another enzyme to NAD. So, why not take NMN? Because that's not the rate limited enzyme to make NAD. That's done really quickly. The rate limited enzyme is NAMPT. So, is clearly you will not hear anyone telling you about this because there's absolutely no money to be made. The supplement is free. Mm-hmm. It's free.
This is why I love you. So what about these people that are going and getting like NAD injections to like, you know,
it could be helpful, but it's not necessary.
So that would be more like in an emergency situation or something, right? Or okay.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of those. I've had them done in the past, just an experiment because I thought it was the rage. I didn't understand it. Even though I read a lot of articles on it, I didn't understand it well, but I've read hundreds of articles on NAD because I wrote a book about EMF, and that's a big part of the understanding of how EMF damages your body. So you have to understand NAD. And so I'm pretty familiar with the literature. And I actually interviewed one of the top NAD researchers, Nicola Conlon, who's in the UK. And she came up with the same conclusion, same thing. You got to activate NAMPT. So we were on the same track, figured it out. Mm-hmm.
So activating NAMPT, niacinamide resistance training, so severe, like extreme,
pushing it.
Not pushing it. Okay. So crushing it. Okay. And sleep, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of the magic formula.
Yes. Circadian rhythm optimization. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not just sleep, but because you can sleep at the wrong time and screw it
up. Okay, cool. So sundown to, it's funny. I was saying a little while ago, I made a case for like how the fiat world and lighting up the planet has kind of fucked us all up. And people were like, oh, you're extreme.
But there's absolutely, you know, the invention of the light bulb had a lot of advantages, of course, but a lot of disadvantages. That's there's a lot of things happened in the late 19th century, late 1800s. The invention of electricity was one. That's when EMF started for the most part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We should people like, so me and my woman, we've basically changed all the light bulbs in the house to red lights. And we've got like LED strips and all that sort of shit lying around everywhere. So basically we no longer have any normal lights.
Flicker free red lights would be good. You could use like a cool white. The warm conventional bulbs you could use, also flicker free when you do need some light, because you're not going to really see much in a red light. I mean, just enough to get around, but you really, if there's something, you know, you may need some a little bit more. But you're right. After sunset, you really only want those lights around. That's it. You don't want any blue, because that is another common way that people suffer. Because you can go to bed, you don't want to see blue light before you're going to bed. You know, you really don't. Especially after sunset. That's an absolute forbidden, because it never existed in nature. Maybe potentially with a lightning strike would be the only way you'd see it. You're certainly not going to see it from a full moon. I mean, it's because the lux is so low, and you're not going to see it from a fire, which is the only way we had light.
Yeah.
You know, that was it. A fire does not produce blue light at all. None, zero, nada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the blue light one. So that ties back into circadian rhythms. Mm-hmm. Speaking of circadian rhythms, I was having a chat with Mark Moss actually about this. So I'm of the opinion that coffee is a shit coin. Where are you on coffee specifically? Because I think it fucks your circadian rhythms, and I don't think it's worth it. I think it wrecks your adrenals.
I don't like the taste. I'm not opposed to people taking it. If they do use it, it should be organic and it should be mycotoxin free, which are a big problem. You know, mold free essentially that with most coffees. So, but there are some perceived benefits from some of the polyphenols in coffee that they attribute to like antioxidants. So, I am not opposed to people doing it. I think it's relatively minor if it's done correctly. And, you know, obviously don't take it before you go to bed. I just don't like it. So I pretty much never use it. I think I don't think I've drank coffee this century, actually. Pretty sure I haven't.
It's funny when you put it like that. I grew up never liking coffee. In fact, I think a couple of my saving graces were, cause I did seed oils in my mid 20s badly. I went vegan, and I mean, I was practically living on seed oils when I look back on it. And I think a couple of the things that helped me along the years was, I mean, probably half decent genetics, but I think I never drank alcohol and I never drank coffee. And I think those two probably buffered me quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't know. The coffee is a big thing, you know.
Okay.
You really, I think it's better not to take it, but I'm not opposed to people using it if they feel they need it. So I think it's this false sense of security, you know, because you should be able to generate your own energy. I mean,
energy.
I never need it for energy, and I basically gave you the keys to increasing your energy, you know, because everything I'm telling you is about improving your mitochondrial function. Your mitochondria are what makes your cellular energy, ATP. So if you've got a good mitochondria functioning, you're not going to need the caffeine. You have plenty of energy. It's crazy. It's just, and one of the other hacks is something called methylene blue, which you can take like 10 milligrams twice a day. It's another way to radically improve your mitochondrial energy. And as I said, it's basically free. It's, you know, $17 for a 4-year supply. It's $4 a year. What's that come out to? You know, 30-40 cents a month.
Yeah. So can people buy that on like Amazon, or is that a prescription thing? Okay.
No, it is a drug, but it's used to actually be prescribed for, like, especially if a woman has a urinary tract infection. This is the best way to treat it because your body doesn't break it down. It excretes it in the urine and it gets concentrated in the bladder. So you actually, unless you're taking like riboflavin, you will be peeing blue if you take a large dose, but because that's such a high dose in the bladder, it kills any pathogen in there, and there's no side effects. It doesn't affect your microbiome in your gut, which, you know, is just destroyed when you take antibiotics. It's one of the worst things you can do. Mm-hmm. But you still need to treat urinary tract infection. It's really common in women, especially women who are eating chicken. Chicken is one of the most primary ways that the salmonella gets transferred from the meat to women. They touch it and they wipe their perennial area and they get contaminated. So methylene blue is pretty good.
What the hell? Okay.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. Quick one on the just on the NMN stuff and NAD and everything before we close that piece out is Resveratrol. I know that the first time I actually even heard about that thing was actually through you. Again, 15 years ago, you were definitely hearing that as well.
Sinclair is the one to popularize that, who was also the guy that popularized NAD. So he did most of that work. And that's, I think it was like early 2000s.
Should people be taking that as a supplement?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. No, okay.
I mean, that some people might benefit from, but it's, no, I don't think so. I mean, if you listen to Paul Saladino, he's a big, giant no. He calls them xenobiotic hormetic stressors and says no with the skull and crossbones over it.
Yeah, well, okay. Didn't realize that.
I'm not as vigorously opposed to them, but I don't personally take it.
Okay. So let me switch gears a little bit to something else. Telomeres. Do you know anything about telomeres? And kind of like, this was a question someone floated and they said, look,
they're the end caps of your chromosomes. And the reason people are interested in them is because it appears that your telomere length goes down the older you get.
As you age, okay.
It has been used as a biomarker for your biologic age, not your chronological age. But most of that research has been disputed, and most of the experts now have shifted to another form of biological age assessment, which was these clocks, DNA methylation clocks, Horvath being one of the primary ones, but there's many others. There's dozens of these different clocks out there now. So that's the hot area of research.
Okay, interesting. So these people who are, like, for example, taking up, what is it, telomerase or something like that?
Telomerase. Well, telomerase is the enzyme that your body has to lengthen your telomeres.
So are they wasting their time?
Actually, it's telomerase.
Telomerase, okay. Yeah. Are they wasting their time taking that kind of shit? Or?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, there was like TA65 was out a few years ago, and it was like, actually, it was $400, $500, $600 a month.
Okay, yeah, Jesus. Okay, so it's another expensive way to kind of give yourself the illusion of...
Yeah, it was well-intentioned. They thought they were doing it. I sincerely believe that, because they test a lot of different approaches, and this is the one that's appeared to work, but I just think it's a flawed approach, and there's much better ways to do it.
So, and when you say much better ways to do it in terms of, like...
improve longevity.
And that's...
most of the things that we've been talking about.
That we've been discussing. Perfect.
You got to do the basics first. You don't do this fancy shit if you're not doing the basics. You know, if you're eating high LA diet and you're not exercising and you're not getting sun exposure, you are ridiculously fooling yourself. Thinking taking a magic pill bullet is going to help is just nuts.
Do you think that's an American cultural thing? Like where everyone wants the silver bullet sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's an artifact of the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, okay.
Some of it took off so well, but it might be intrinsic to the American psychology. I don't know. I wasn't around 2 centuries ago. So I've only been around since the 50 years after the pharmaceutical company took control. It started in 1910. So
it's an interesting thing because, I mean, I've traveled quite a bit, and you know, the quick fix or the antidote or the hack seems to be such
American.
Yeah, very much so.
I would validate that too, because
Western. Maybe.
Yeah, it could be Western. Yeah, I think maybe Western, because when I saw patients in my practice, the people who did the best were the people from Eastern Europe, because they totally got it. I didn't have to explain the basis to them at all. They understood it because their parents and their grandparents, this is what they did. This is where they lived their life.
Yeah.
But anyone else? And one of the quick fix.
Interesting. That's an interesting anecdote. Okay, a couple more things, because I know you've got to run and you've got some books to read. Books to write.
Right. 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 Big difference. I can read the books on the beach.
I've got here, someone was asking about V-cell therapy and...
it's an advanced topic. Yeah. But it is. But I think the broader perspective is stem cell therapy. There's a lot of ways to get stem cells. It's expensive, usually more than $10,000 a pop. I would recommend no one get stem cell therapy. No one should get stem cell therapy unless it's V-cells, which is the best stem cell therapy out there. It's short for very small embryonic-like stem cells. They're the best. It's taken from your peripheral blood. So there's no chance of a side effect because it's your own blood. It's kind of like PRP, platelet-rich plasma. except it has, it's extracted pretty similarly, spun down with a centrifuge and then activated with a laser and then directed with a laser, and which wakes these cells up, and they can have nothing short of many miracles occurring with this thing. I actually do them regularly myself, and I think it's a really potent anti-aging intervention. It's not cheap. Mm-hmm. Usually somewhere, I mean, typically close to 10,000 for most, but it could be more depending, but it's a pricey thing. But stem cells generally can be a lot more expensive than 10,000. And mm-hmm. it's not the first thing you want to do. It's a really super advanced approach. If you've gotten all the basics done, it's not the first thing you jump into, but sometimes people use them for repairing tissue.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask. From.
Yeah, so for there, it's okay, but still, you're going to do better if you've done all the basics first.
Mm-hmm. So it's okay. I think you answered the question that I was going to ask. Is that I assume it's for more specific kind of injury related stuff.
Yeah, and if someone younger, that would be the thing. If you get older, my age, then it's for longevity.
Mm-hmm. How do you use it in a longevity sense?
You just inject it in your blood.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? Okay. Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So the cells find homes where they're needed, and they just try to repair and recover whatever tissue is damaged.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting. But once again, without the basics, all you're doing is putting Band-Aid on a...
Yeah. Not a good strategy. Big
problem. Okay. All right. So that was that one, V-cell. And then dental is kind of another one that's come up. And I mean, I was lucky to have met a lady, man, back in the Gold Coast, and she was
the Gold Coast of Australia.
Yeah, of Australia, quite a number of years ago, and she was very, again, she reminded me of you. She was early in the camp of against seed oils and against shit carbohydrates and all that sort of stuff. This was a good 7-8 years ago when I met her, and. She put me onto this this holistic dentist who's a biochemist and dentist and dental hygienist and all this sort of stuff, all rolled into one. And through him, I kind of learnt the importance of the teeth and the fact that, you know, our dental structure and our very teeth are like connected to almost
mental
everything
health.
In the body.
Mental health in general.
Yeah.
It's connected to your biological health, no question.
And you know, things like, you know, people go and get fucking what do you call it, root canals, and they completely destroy their health because they create something.
Well, not completely, but many times they are a problem. I never would suggest having a root canal done. It doesn't leave you a lot of better options because you still have to pull the tooth. I mean, it's only pulled when it's gone too far. Usually it's a periapical abscess on the tooth, mm-hmm, and it's just, mm-hmm, there's no way to recover. It's just got to be removed. So they'll do a root canal, try to save it. And it's just one of the worst things you can do. Now, sometimes it's not that bad, but typically they almost invariably alter and band. They can cause really severe health consequences. Many cancers develop from these things.
Yeah.
So you want to have, you could do an implant, but most of the time you just have a partial. Especially if it's on your upper teeth, I'm assuming your lower ones, especially the back molars, and then an implant makes sense. I don't like titanium. I would use zirconium. So
yeah, there's been some interesting new studies about zirconium that kind of question it as well, because I guess anything foreign in the body starts.
It seems to be, it's not really a metal. So it's most metal-free dentists, and I've been to many of them, believe it's acceptable. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. At least that's my understanding of the current status of that within the biological dental community. Now, that might be wrong. I mean, who knows? But I think it's a safer way to go.
Yeah, I think, I mean.
I only have one implant because mm-hmm. It was on my lower molar, but I have three or four other teeth removed in my upper jaw, and I have partials for that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I have one partial, kind of like a cap, and then I actually have one molar removed, which happened as a result of, I guess I actually kind of link it back to my vegan days. My teeth actually got quite weak mm-hmm. when I was vegan, and then I had a couple. I think particularly I think sugars are most dangerous for your teeth. More than anything else, because what happens is parasites start to build up and they just eat away at
the integrity of it. Usually it's bacteria, typically. It builds in a plaque. So you have to be careful, and you see your diagenist regularly and make sure that because the plaque can develop to gingivitis and then periodontitis, and lots, and then it leads to these infections in your teeth, these abscesses, and then your tooth is gone. So you have to be really careful, for sure.
Yeah, so I think that's another hack for people that I'm always like a big believer of. If your gums are bleeding, for example, when you floss, but like that's a fucking bad sign. Yeah.
So it's usually because, you've got to have all that plaque gone. I actually use a dental scaler, which probably isn't good for most people because I just get plaque real easy. So that has worked tremendously for me. I used to have to go to the hygienist every 3 months. Now I can go like almost every six.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the scaler gets what the hygienist would typically do. She goes in there with a scaler, right? So if you're careful, and I'm a physician and surgeon, so I know how to use surgical tools, so I can do it. But you can hurt yourself if you're not careful.
I mean, I think the simplest way is make sure you bloody floss at least once a day, if not twice. But then also I use a saline.
Gotta be careful on the floss too, because many of them have microplastics in them.
Yeah, they're all. Yeah, a lot of them are shit. You got to get yourself like a decent floss, but that, and then also saline toothpaste, like none of this commercial fucking junk. You need salt based, or even like salt bicarb.
I do use a toothbrush, but I don't use any toothpaste with it. I have a Sonicare toothpaste or toothbrush, and I just don't use anything with it, but I do irrigate with it's called dental floss or irrigated water irrigation. Dental irrigation, I guess. And I use peroxide, about 1 to 2 mL of 12% peroxide in there and some potassium bicarbonate. Mm-hmm. So I rinse with that and that seems to work pretty well.
Yeah, okay. Cool. Well, Doc, thank you so much for joining me on this. This was
You're welcome.
A wealth of information. Is there any... Go ahead.
Oh, people probably, if they want more, they can go to my website, which is mercola.com. The last August, we took out all our articles down, which is like over 25 years, like 15,000 articles. And we're in the process of transferring them all over. The last 3 or 4 years have mostly been transferred to our Substack, which is Take Control of Health on Substack. So that's a paid membership. And the reason we elected to do that, so it's only $5 a month or $50 a year. We donate the profits to our charities that we support. So it's not for generating revenue. It's really for providing the legal protection so that when we have our material up there, it has another layer that the government can't come and get us with, because they were making some pretty serious threats back the last year or so.
Yes. I mean, you had to take down, I think you said this at Mark's conference, like almost a quarter of a century of work, right? That
25
years. And this is the stuff being moved across, right? So you didn't have to delete it, right? You just had to take it down.
Yeah. Essentially, okay. It's not available. Mm-hmm. We didn't destroy it and burn it. We still have access to the archives, but it's not a bit visible.
Available. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, so I'll have those links in the show notes. What are you allowed to tell us what the book you're working on at the moment is?
I think it's really important because I fully believe that the result of what the global cabal is doing, that the world is going to be kind of crushed in a few years. It doesn't look good at all. It does not look good. I'm not here to spread hopium because that's getting pretty bad. And, I was a Boy Scout, so the motto was be prepared. Mm-hmm. So, most important book I'm writing is a compilation, is a revision of an earlier book I wrote in 2007, which is Take Control of Your Health, which is relatively primitive to what the new revision is going to be, because I'm essentially going to integrate almost every important article we've written in the last 25 years and put it in this book. Mm-hmm. So all the basic important principles will be there. It'll probably be 1,000 pages. I hope to have it out this year.
It'll be like,
it's really fun. It is. And, everything, all the things we talked about, except in more depth, right? It's going to be there. So that's I'm working on. That won't be out for a while. And another book is I'm co-writing with a expert, Morley Robbins, on copper and iron and vitamin A. So it's going to be about that important thing. One of the other things you could do too, if you want to stay healthy in your male or your postmenopausal woman, is to donate your blood. really important.
Yeah, actually, you mentioned this one to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So at least twice a year. That's the bare butt minimum. I donate 6 pints a year, 6 pints a year. So that's every 2 months. But I do mine a little bit differently. I take the blood out myself. I put a catheter in my arm every week and take out 2 ounces a week, which comes out to 6 pints a year.
So is it better to do it regularly and smaller
amounts? Well, you can do a blood donation for free. It doesn't cost you. But if you're going to have someone come to your house and remove blood from you, usually that's somewhere between $100 and $200. So it's up pretty quickly. So I could do it myself. All I have to do is buy the equipment and I can do it for free, essentially. But ideally, if you have access to someone who can do it inexpensively, that's the best, is take a small amount out. Because, you know, when you take a pint of blood out, that's 10% of your blood supply. That's a lot. So a lot of people, especially for teed, or if you're younger, that's even, you know, if you're a 100-pound woman, that's a lot more than 10%. It might be 15, even 20% blood supply. So
would you recommend then people do maybe like go and donate blood maybe once a quarter, for example, and do like a
That's probably
of
a happy
pint.
Medium.
Yeah.
That's if you can do it once a quarter, that'd be that's a healthy amount. 4 times a year is good. I just like to be OCD and I'm doing 50% more.
Yeah, that's one. Thank you for bringing actually that up, because I remember you mentioning that to me when I was telling you I was feeling low energy.
So you have to lower your iron, you got to increase your copper. So copper bisglycinate, like 4 to 6 milligrams a day, is really healthy. And then eating retinol, vitamin A in your liver would be probably the best. Or beef organs, but liver has the highest concentration. You don't need a lot, maybe an ounce or 2 ounces a day at the most, or a few ounces of once, you know, a week. That's it. So, but that will build your vitamin A stores up, because vitamin A is so important. Oh, the other thing, the sun will convert vitamin A in your blood from retinol to retinoids, which is really important. That's another benefit of the sun.
The never-ending benefits of the sun.
I'm telling you, there's this.
I think that's what I'm going to call this podcast.
Well, it's obviously more comprehensive than just the sun, but the sun is really important. And it's free.
Indeed. All right, Doc. So there's those two books coming out. There's the migration across the Substack. There's McCullough.com. Is there anything else of critical import that you want to mention to the listeners and the viewers?
No, I'd sign up. We have a daily newsletter. We put out 3 articles a day.
And I am a subscriber.
They're widely viewed across the world in many large platforms like Epoch Times. They frequently publish our articles. The Defender, which is Bobby Kennedy's site, frequently publishes our articles, republishes them, because we get free permission, anyone to do it. And if you want to subscribe to our site for free, you can download these articles every day and, you know, save them yourself before they get transferred over to Substack. So we have no problems with doing it. We even give you the links and the buttons to do it. So yeah, we want the information out there. We really do. We just need the legal protection that Substack provides.
Do you move everything across the Substack, or is it only a specific number of them?
No, everything.
Everything goes to Substack. Okay. Good to know. All right. Well,
and then for my Take Control book, which is going to come out later this year. And then we have our 25th year celebration this year, which happens in August. So,
what are you doing for the celebration?
I'm hoping to give a condensed version of the LA diet book out. So it's going to be 20 pages of the most important information you need to know. And it's really highly edited and concise and densely packed, and all the details you need to lower your LA linoleic acid. So that should be available as my free gift to everyone. And I hope to have that available within a month.
You're an absolute machine. I mean, how many books have you written? Like 2000?
No, like only 18.
18. Only 18. That's just a walk in the park.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, Doc, thank you so much.
You're welcome. This
has meant the world. I really appreciate you coming on.
Okay, glad to be of help.
Thank you for listening to the Wake Up Podcast. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I'll try and read them each week and send you a shout out. And remember to grab a copy of the Uncommunist Manifesto and join us in defeating plague that is consuming our world.